Hello and welcome back to another episode of Secrets Behind the Music Business. I'm your host, Barry Victor, and today we have with us a very special guest who is the Data Strategy Manager for Downtown Music Publishing and Song Trust, Ms. Brittany Foreman. Welcome, Brittany. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you. We appreciate you for joining us on the show today.
Of course.
Getting ready to drop this knowledge on us, so I'm very excited.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. I feel like I've been getting a lot of love from the Downtown Music Publishing and Song Trust team. You guys have been very helpful and support me with this podcast, so I do appreciate you guys a lot. So before we actually get into the questions, would you like to give us a quick background about how you got into the music business and what you're actually doing to support artists and creators?
Sure. I actually got, it's kind of a long story, so I'll try to keep it very concise. I grew up as a trained dancer and I was trained on different instruments, but I don't have kind of the natural gift that other people in my family do. So like my brother can play music by ear, so he'll hear it and he'll play it, and that gets really frustrating. So I was really good at like math and science. And so when I was in college, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And an opportunity came to where I could be like a sound engineer for a local venue, kind of like learn stuff that was fairly technical. And that's kind of where I fell in love with working with musicians. And since there, I've worked in various capacities, always far more on the technical side, because I don't play instruments. So I've helped out with like artist management, been a sound engineer, worked at record labels, music magazines, data, music data companies, and currently I work in data at a music publishing company, and it's kind of all in service to the mission of helping artists make a living doing what they love to do. And I get to be a little bit boss because I have numbers behind me, so I'm able to point to like, this is why I'm right. So it's very fulfilling for me. And it also is able to help a lot more artists than if I were to say be an artist manager, because I can work for a whole company who has a larger roster of artists than if I was just to take on like a full handful of people I could like talk to on the regular. So this is probably the best fit for me.
Got it. So with your educational background, what did you actually go to school for that allowed you to jump in this field?
I studied in undergrad marketing with focus in statistics and economics.
Okay.
But I did go back to the continuing studies at like General Assembly so that I could learn data analytics and data science and be able to build machine learning and algorithms and be able to like pull data from databases. So because you're always able to be able to pivot what you know, and kind of like as long as you're willing to learn more. I believe that there's far more opportunities open to you. So anytime I'm just like, I want to try something else, I'm more than willing to just jump in and like learn a new skill to help advance me.
Mm-hmm. Were you naturally gifted with numbers as a child?
I was, and at the same time, I wasn't super great in class because, like I said earlier, I like to be right with the numbers. So I'd always be the person in class raising the hand correcting teachers, and they tend to hate that. So I didn't always do well in school, and that was frustrating, but I was always really good with the numbers. I was really good at like counting up the check at the end of the night and being able to do percentages for tax included in tip. So like, I'm always really good on the fly doing the numbers, but it was a struggle growing up, mostly because of like just generally who I am.
Mm-hmm. That's funny, though. I could imagine. I wouldn't be surprised if they use you on the payroll services and accounting as well.
I mean, I try to help as many departments at our company as possible. So, but I have no desire to do payroll or finance. I don't, like finance was a class that I do not ever want to take again. So,
oh, okay. Well, at least you got through it. I'm pretty sure DMP and Song Trust is glad to have you though now.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, how was South by Southwest as well?
It was amazing. I got to actually talk about data at South by, which was really fun. Actually, I moderated a panel, so I have all my friends talk about data at South by, which is really great because it's kind of what we talk about at brunch when we hang out, kind of like how we're able to do our jobs better. So it was really beneficial to the people who came to the panel, but it was also really great to like share this knowledge outside of our close-knit circle. So it was really great. It was really good reception. The room was packed. There was apparently a line out the door, which I was kind of like, guys, this is like our table talk all the time. Like, I was a little floored by it and at the same time kind of incredulous, because we're like, oh, this was amazing. So it's really good to kind of find this niche of like data and music and being able to explain and break it down for people so it's not as intimidating.
Mm-hmm. So before this, were you aware of like how many people were actually interested in how data works? Or is it usually like when you do panels and stuff, it's only like a few people that come by?
It's kind of always the same people you see. It's all the same different, all the same festivals and conferences, because it's kind of like this conference circuit. So you see all the same people at all the panels. So it was really interesting. I tried to keep it diverse and have some of my friends who are journalists, because we want to talk about how it's changing and how it changes the way we talk about it. So I try to mix it up and not just have like pure data people, data scientists on the panel, kind of like talk to it in more of a layman's term. So that was really exciting because it kind of brought a more diverse group, and something that is, so it wasn't as intimidating for musicians themselves. It's something that was probably more focused towards industry people and how they use data to find new artists, but also so that artists could be more aware of how data is being used and how that will affect their careers.
Got it. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And so I guess it was one of the questions that I originally had, so I'm going to kind of go out of order. But when you say for industry people to use it, how often are they using it today when, you know, they want to sponsor an artist or they want to sign them to a label? Is this like kind of a norm now, or is it still in an infant phase where they're like, we're just checking out the numbers and maybe we might sign them or do a sponsorship deal? Or is it kind of like it's hard and cut, we are only focusing on the numbers before we make a deal?
It varies from company to company. There are some companies that are very data savvy and ahead of the curve in terms of all parts of the ecosystem and publishing. Downtown Song Trust, Cobalt, and labels, it's Republic and Universal generally has like an A&R research where they look at the data. And there are many other labels that do that as well. But then there's also people who still, like, it's a very solid mix. There are people who still go to the shows of, like, bands they've never heard of, kind of. So it really depends company to company, so I can't speak across the board, but there are companies that are very much into the data every day, looking at how this will affect. It's kind of like a risk assessment is what data is, because at the end of the day, all of these are companies. So they want to make sure that you have people who will stream your music, people who will buy concert tickets, people who will engage with the content that you're going to put out, because that kind of gives them assurance that if they bet on you, there will be some sort of return on investment.
Got it. Now, are there a few specific platforms that get focused on more than others when it comes to the data that they're measuring? Like, what's most frequently measured? Is it YouTube? Is it Spotify, SoundCloud?
The general consensus that I've heard from my circle of friends is that it's taken all in context, because the weight of different platforms changes from day to day depending on kind of the whims of the market. So you kind of have to take all of it into context and kind of see. Obviously, streaming is very important. But you want to make sure that an artist has like some sort of authenticity or some connection to people. So that's where like socials come in, and engagement is a lot easy. Like, engagement is very important, because it's great if you have 5 million followers, but if only 2 people are commenting on any of your content, it's kind of obvious that you probably bought followers, and people see through that pretty quickly. It's always one of my favorite things when I'm like going through charts and stuff. I was like, oh, let's look at their numbers. That seems really high in comparison to like what they're doing. And if you have the tools like Next Big Sound, where you're able to graph it, you can kind of see all of a sudden they have this spike in followers, but they didn't put any content up that day. So you're just like, that's highly sus. So it's very easy, like as the industry is becoming more data savvy, like they're able to spot those things a mile away. So it's always still very important. While we can be like, numbers are great, but engagement is better, and making sure that you're authentically connecting to your audience is something that we're able to read even just through the data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it is so easy for people to just, you know, buy the bots and the comments and the likes. So is there like an industry standard that people can look at it and say, okay, this looks like a real measurement or it's accurate? These are real people. Like, say, let's just use the number 100 since it's easy. So if you have 100 followers, in percentage wise, what does it look like in terms of people being really engaged? Is it 20%? Should you have 20 likes for every 100 followers you have?
I can't say across the board. I can say with my background as a data person, generally 20% is kind of like what people shoot for, or like what you should shoot for. Kind of like I have something like 100 something followers on Instagram, so I just hope for like maybe I'll get 20 likes on the post. But I'm not an artist, but that's kind of like a good gauge and be like, is this good content, or is kind of like not where my audience is at. That's also kind of like an indicator. It's like you could have all these followers and you might have some people who are really engaged, but you're putting up content that kind of isn't resonating with them. So that's also like kind of an indicator both ways. So maybe they're like, oh, there are some posts that have really great engagement and they have kind of like this, for lack of a better word, shit post. And then there's like two people to interact, and that's like kind of like, okay, maybe this person just needs help with like a social media plan, because like sometimes they hit gold and sometimes they hit rock, and that's also like, that's why everything is taken in context.
Nice, that's interesting. Okay, now how important is data when it comes to artist discovery on like different platforms? You have the Spotify playlist, and you know, you have certain channels that may get a lot of views on like YouTube. Is that really helping people get discovered by being placed in specific like genres of music? If your song is in like an R&B playlist that gets millions of views, is that taken into consideration a lot, or just how does it work?
It is and it isn't. I'm clearly biased, but because there is such a plethora of music available, having some sort of signal through the data helps you kind of cut through a lot of the noise. So if something is kind of trending higher, even at the lower level, you're able to see that on the data side and kind of like, oh, let's pay attention to this specific artist, because obviously they're able to connect with something, even if it's local, it's regional. People look at local Shazam charts. They look at Spotify charts. They look at Billboard charts. They look at Pandora charts. There's a plethora of charts that people can look into and tap into and kind of like see where the signal is coming from. So if you're doing something that resonates at all across in any sort of channel, it's easier for people who need to be paying attention to you. It's easy to get their attention. Because there's artists who've broken on SoundCloud, and SoundCloud does this thing where you're able to like, they also have charts which aren't as popular as probably like the other charts, but it kind of like aggregates like who's getting a lot of play this week. And I like going through that sometimes, be like, okay, who's somebody I haven't listened to? And sometimes I'm just like, wow, I'm very out of touch with like whatever this genre is. And sometimes I was like, oh, this is a bop, I like this a lot, and I'm gonna stand for it now. So those are really great things. Like, data is great. Like, if you are in tune with like a specific genre or a scene, for lack of a better word, like if you were very into like Oakland, like underground hip hop, like you're gonna know what's coming up because you're probably at those shows, all your friends. Like, data is like in lieu of like a larger circle of friends. So it's telling you things that your friends will probably be like, oh, listen to this. Data is like, oh, you don't have friends in like Atlanta underground hip hop, but there's data that tells you, oh, this is what's popping over there. So that's why data is important, because it kind of gives you a larger scope of like things of where you're probably not as in tune with.
Mm-hmm. So prior to the digital age, are you familiar with what type of data they were looking at before, like in major record labels? Like, what type of stuff were they tracking? Because I assume like the type of stuff you do now wasn't around, you know, 15, 20 years ago. So what were the things that they were measuring?
Data has always been available. It's just been in a different format. I think probably like in the early 90s, they were looking at record store orders. Like, everyone would send like a nominal amount to like different record stores, and the ones that would get orders for more of like a certain product and larger orders, they'd be like, oh, this market is really paying attention for this kind of sound. There is a book, I believe it's called Anatomy of, I'm not in front of my library right now, but I will look it up. But there is a book that kind of talks about how Doug Morris would go down to the sell or the buyer for a record label, and he kind of like want to see the orders of what record labels were ordering. And that's how he kind of like figured out like what different songs are popping in different markets, which acts are starting to get a signal. And he'd be like, okay, this is something we need to pay attention to. And that's kind of like how, like kind of what SoundScan is and all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very smart way to figure out who to put on your roster. That's smarter Doug Morris to do. Now, what type of data should be tracked and utilized to help propel an artist's career? Like what type of, I would say platforms or DSPs or any type of services, which one should be tracked the most? Like if I'm an independent artist, what should I be focused on if I want to get the attention of somebody potentially signing me or getting some type of sponsorship or investor?
As an artist, probably like you need to have streaming somewhere, and the more accessible it is, the better, because different audiences have different tastes in DSPs. Some people are diehard Pandora because they have the algorithm that serves the music. Some people are hardcore Spotify. So making sure it's available on all of them, you don't have to like put like a super ton of marketing, but make sure like, oh, people, it can get surfaced. And then using kind of like data from social, like Facebook's generally so important. Instagram is becoming more important because people are visual creatures. Twitter is pretty good. Using that data to kind of interact with your audience. There is an interesting case study about O Wonder and how they use data to inform. They would release a song a month, and they would use their data to kind of gauge how they should perform their song. And even before they were finished with the song a month, because they did it for years, so they'd have 12 songs in, they ended up getting a record deal because they were using data and leveraging kind of like their social interaction with the songs they were releasing and kind of like tuning in to the reaction to be able to build a bigger release or signal about their music. And so they were able to get signed based off just using the data for that.
When you say perform their song, you mean like they were looking at which one was performing the best and that's the ones that they would do at the shows?
Well, yeah, they would use it, the data, in conjunction with real life performances. So kind of like, oh, this song, people are kind of like dropping off, or like maybe we'll not like open with that song, or kind of like couch in between. That's not like a fan favorite, but still it gave them very valuable information about how people were reacting to their music.
Okay. Now, within your experience in this field, is there a trend in KPIs that you notice like right before an artist has reached a point of some sort of independent success or stability?
I'm sorry, what was that? The first part of that question, one more time.
Just like, are there specific key performance indicators that you always have seen consistently before an artist have made their way from just being an underground artist to somebody that can have independent success or stability? Have you consistently seen like, oh, they all had this unique thing about them? Like maybe they all had 1 million followers on a certain platform, or they all had 1 million streams on a certain platform. Are there certain things that you see that stick out between everybody that can transition from making it a hobby to an actual full-time career?
Sadly, I know this probably isn't the answer you want, but no, everybody's different. It's just kind of building on what your personal brand is and continuing to grow your audience. Because some people are going to do really well in social media, but like they're not great performers. But their songs are fire. So they decide, oh, maybe not tour as much, but just like give people some content, some like pretty viral memes, some dank memes. Those are great. We've seen a lot of that with the rise of different songs in the last year. Like there's been the mannequin challenge. That went viral. That definitely helped elevate. I mean, Black Beatles was a really great song, but that definitely it became like a national kind of like, it permeated like kind of national airways because it was attached to like this viral meme. So you kind of just kind of have to prepare yourself for like lightning to strike and just work as hard as you can and kind of know who you are and who your audience is and kind of build on that the best that you can.
Now, that's interesting that you brought that up. Is there like people who study how like challenges and trendy things have affected the way music is consumed versus the traditional way? Like, are more people getting their music played or listened to because somebody's making a video to it on Instagram versus them just releasing it, you know, as an album or EP? Is there like a specific group who's studying that?
There's a growing amount of data journalists and music journalists who are looking at the data and kind of being able to study these long term. Sherry Hughes is a really good music journalist. Emily Blake's a really good music journalist who's also a data journalist. We kind of like look at the studies and are able to point out to you like different trends that have happened through the data. And they're able to kind of say, oh, well, this is the first year that hip hop has come to like the Hot 100 chart in a really big way. And it hasn't been this way for a very long time. And so they're full of these amazing insights. And I just like kind of like want to point to them because they're really great at it. But this is something that they brought up also during South by Southwest. They're just like the memes have like been able to breathe new life into songs that probably wouldn't have gotten as big airplay as they were before.
Right. Because I was wondering, like, will people start using this as a strategy? Like, if the data comes out and it supports this method, if people are going to be like, I'm not going to release a song just by itself anymore. My actual strategy is going to be releasing every song with a meme or with a dance or some type of challenge to it. Like, I wonder if it'll get to that point where that's the actual strategy versus the traditional release.
Maybe that'd be great, but you can't predict virality because you can't predict what's going to connect with people. There are people who do like, oh, this is the challenge, etc., and it does pick up a little bit, but you can't plan for it to like become this huge hit thing just because you attach it to something. Especially if it's something you, like, if it's content that you really believe in, you kind of want it to be able to stand on its own while having it be elevated by a meme is great. Then it will just become kind of a fixed point in time, and you kind of want a song to be able to transcend that, if that makes sense. So you'll want something that you're like, I can release this if it connects to like a meme. Awesome. Perfect. If not, it's still something I believe enough in that as I believe that it will last for, because memes kind of like come and they die off, and you're kind of like, you can point to memes that stayed specifically in like 2002 because they don't really, they don't translate well through time. So you don't kind of want to attach your song to something that's not going to translate well through time. It's great if it's like really good to like get the rest of your catalog and the rest of your workout, but probably not like something that you should hinge your entire marketing efforts on.
Right. So it's better if the song has its own legs first and then the meme gets attached to it versus trying to do it the opposite way.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. Now, how often is data used in the music industry when it comes to leveraging deals with record labels or getting publishing deals? Because I know you guys are a publishing company. Does that ever come into play when you guys are, you know, doing co-publishing deals and trying to figure out what that might look like for an artist? If they're saying like, yo, I'm doing this a lot, look at my data, I think I want a larger part of the pie. Do you guys consider that?
For publishing, not as much. Because by that time, especially, it depends on the people we work with. Like Songfest is far more indie and it's kind of like the same deal across the board, very democratized. For Downtown, it's a little bit more of the established songwriter. So that's more like based on like what your songs have already done. And that's specifically on the vehicle of the song. For your label, that's more, it's a little bit more speculative if they're signing you as a new artist, because you don't have an album yet. You might not have an EP. So that's data, having like a large social following gives you a little bit more leverage there. If you're a new artist getting signed to a label and you're like, I've got all these followers. I've got, and remember, engagement is key. I've got all of this engagement. Like, my fans will come to my shows. My fans will buy my merch. My fans will stream my music. They will buy my vinyls, et cetera. That gives you a little bit more leverage than, like, walking in being like, I just write really good songs. They sound great. Because then kind of the label's like, what are they going to sell? If you can be like, I come with my own audience. They'll be like, all right, cool. And you'd be like, this is kind of like what I want in terms of a deal. And it gives you a little bit more negotiating power.
Now, when it comes to processing that data, are you helping on the side of how to actually make that transfer into actual dollars? Are you helping in that area as well? Because if a person, say, has 10,000 followers, and say these are real followers, but then when it's time for them to go perform, nobody is coming to their shows. You know, like, are you involved in, like, how do we get these people who actually have eyeballs on you to actually come out and see you perform or to actually buy your records?
Do I do that now? Currently, no.
Okay.
Have I before? It's just kind of like, that's where the engagement is like, great, you have all these followers, but are you engaging with them? Are they compelled by your content in any way to engage back? That's why I've been like trying to hit on the head. Engagement is super important, because those are the people who talk to you and like comment on every post, like in a thoughtful way, not just like first. those that like will engage, those are the people who will come to your shows, like granted they're close enough. So being able to have enough of those people in different markets where you're like, I could play a show here, and people would come to the show. And these are also the same people who are going to tell their friends about your show and like about your music and how their friends should get into it too. Those are the people who are going to be on the street team. So those people, the way that social media is super helpful is that these people don't have to be in your neighborhood. These are people that don't have to be in your own backyard, but you can engage them through the World Wide Web and be able to kind of like be able to start building markets of where you don't live. So it's great if you have that audience, but again, you can pay for followers. If you have engagement and like true engagement, these are like, you're like, oh, I've got probably a good 50 people in Dallas, Texas that really like I engage with and we are able to talk. Maybe I could do like a small venue show or open for somebody there because I've got enough pull to be able to sell these tickets. And then you let those people know in advance. And you're like, hey, fun fact, I'm coming to your town. It's going to be like a secret show, but like you and all your friends can come. Tickets are like $5, et cetera, whatever. And that's how you're able to start building those markets, because you're able to use the data that you have and the engagement that you have to kind of like build this in real life experience.
Now, for someone who's just purely independent, is them by themselves and they don't have a great person like you on their team, what services could they use or should they know about that can help them track the data?
In 2018, it's really great because almost every platform offers some sort of data component. Like Spotify has an artist dashboard where you can see the data of how your music's reacting across their platform. Pandora has the same one. There's Next Big Sound. There's Endify. There is Soundcharts. There's a plethora of tools that one can access. Google Analytics, if you have a website, so that you can kind of see where people are logging into your website from. Kind of like, okay, these are markets that people might be interested. Anytime that you have like a web store, like there, it'll also give you information of kind of like the breakdown of where people live. So you're like, oh, these are people that are buying merch. There's a bunch of people in Miami, Florida that are like really into my stuff. Maybe I should like go into like a small show there. So there's a bevy of options in terms of aggregates. Like their Next Big Sound is pretty good in terms of aggregates of social, but it's great to have context of everything. So just being super savvy about that and being like, okay, let me check, like be like Monday's the day you check all your numbers and kind of like, okay, here's where I stand. Here's kind of like new developments in the past week. And how do we leverage this to kind of like make decisions going forward? Just being super diligent about that.
Okay. So just being like consistent all the time. Now,
Yes.
when it comes to data supporting, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this because I had it and then I thought about something else. So I might come back to it. Give me a second.
That's fine. I do that all the time.
Right, because you're saying a lot of stuff, and I'm like, I don't want to cut you off, but then it's like all these things are sparking in my brain. So I'll just go to the next question, which is, can you give us like some real world examples, since you've been working in this field for some time, of examples that how data has played a role in helping artists cross over from that quote unquote starving artist to a full-time working musician? Like, who are some examples that people can look at?
That's what I referenced the A Wonder case study, because they went from independent artists to signed within 12 months because they were using the data to kind of reconfigure their approach about how they should perform, how their songs are reacting. Because within a month, it's a very agile time to where you're like, okay, this worked, this didn't work, and you can like move very quickly. So they went from unsigned to like independent unsigned to like signed to Republic Records in the US and Island Records in the UK. I'm trying to keep that right. I actually had to look it up. But that's kind of like being consistent with the data. They gave themselves 12 months to be very consistent with the data and kind of use that to their advantage. So that's kind of one of the best examples I can think of in currently of how an artist went from independent to like signed using just data.
And what's the name again? I didn't catch it right when you said it.
O Wonder, usually stylized as, yeah, as OW.
Okay. I wonder. Now, just to go back to the Next Big Sound for a second, is that something where just like an independent artist can sign up and then they get to see all of their data like once they enter their usernames for all these platforms?
Yes. I
Okay.
mean, it usually takes a little bit of time because it starts from time of connection. So it usually takes about 24 to 48 hours for them to start getting numbers in, and then it'll kind of have a historical number for you from the time you connect. So the sooner you get on, the better, and you're able to like start seeing your numbers grow. And the book that I referenced earlier that I can think of is called The Song Machine, where it talks about how people would track hit songs. So there you go.
All right. Now, is there data out there to support the how much consistency people are having in a specific area, whether it's releasing videos once a week or once a month or making posts every day versus not posting every day? Is there data to support how it's more beneficial if you do these things more consistently versus someone who doesn't?
There are, I know of that I can't think of right now. It's more beneficial to post consistently, but that doesn't mean constantly. You have to find a rhythm that works for you and your audience. So there's not like any hard data that's like once a week, that's what you need to post, or like once a day, that's what you need to post, because it varies. So you see a lot more sustained growth by people who are consistent in their postings or in their brand or in their message, and kind of just kind of like, oh, they know who they are, they know what they're talking about, and I can kind of come here on a kind of regular basis to kind of see if they what new content they put up.
So what, in your opinion, is the best type of stuff to post up or the type of videos to release? Because you talked about engagement. Now, if you're just posting up something random, like, people take pictures of their food and put that up, is that something that people will engage with?
I mean, they will, but that's not them coming to your shows. Definitely don't put out, don't post puppy videos. I mean, they're cute, but you should be also be on brand to like, that's really what I'm about. I'm really into puppies. Like, that's fine if that's what you're about. But if you're just like, I just want people to click like on this, like that, we can see through that. Because I'll see people who are posting like their horoscope every day, and it's like, cool, that's content. But what about the rest of you? And what makes me want to engage with you based on this? So, general and compelling content that is consistent. So, if it's something you're just like, yeah, I definitely would be into this, and it's something that you're passionate about, there's odds are somebody else is passionate about it. But if it's like your burger from Wendy's, I mean, you could be really passionate about that, but like, let's be honest, like it's not in and out. So, I'm from LA, so I'm very biased about like where I get a burger.
Okay.
So that you have to think, is this compelling? Is it on brand? Is it consistent with like everything else? And if the answer is no, put it in your Insta story instead. Just a thought.
Wow, that's a great tip. That makes a lot of sense. So if you were someone's manager, hypothetically, what would that look like to you in terms of posting? Like, what would you say people should be posting up? Or even percentage-wise, should it be 80%, make sure it's related to your craft, and then the other 20% can be random? You know, what would you tell your artist to do?
People love an inside look into the artist process. So, like, if you're in the studio, if you're, like, writing lyrics, like, make sure you document that. Like, it takes people along on the journey. Like, if you're, like, having a fun day at, like, Six Flags, like, people want to see you as a whole person. But, like, make sure that it's kind of, like, the gist of the page is, like, I'm a musician and I make music. Like, obviously, if you're riffing through, like, different tunes, like, set up your iPhone on, like, hands-free mode and, like, take a little short video of you, like, singing, like, the chorus or, like, putting together the bridge. And so people kind of feel connected to your art as they watch it grow. It's kind of like when people show you videos of their children growing up, and then you feel more connected even if you've never met that child. Right. When that song is finished and you release it, they've seen you make the bridge. They've seen you make the chorus. They've seen you write out the lyrics. They're just kind of like, oh, this is what it looks like when it's done. And they're a little bit more connected to it. So that's in terms of content that works, that is great content. Don't make it like super formulaic where it's the same thing every time, but just kind of like, this is me in the studio. This is me having fun. And people always also want to see you having fun doing this. If it looks like work, nobody's going to like buy into that where you're just like, oh, I have to go to the studio again. This is the work. Like, nobody wants to hear that. Like they want a little bit of like, oh, this is super fun. Like, cause a lot of people want to be artists or musicians or creatives. And so kind of like being like, I really enjoy this. I'm so grateful for like these opportunities. Like that's the good stuff that people are all like always ready to get on board with. So those are, as somebody who used to do that, and I don't anymore, I would always be like, well, when you're like building a song, make sure you like capture some content or like tweet about like how much fun you're having or like how you're like super excited or what the song means to you. That kind of gives people context for like the content that's going to be coming out soon and kind of gets them to buy in before the song's even dropped. So when you're like, hey, I dropped a song, it isn't like a blind Beyonce drop in the middle of the night, because she's Beyonce, she can do that. But people are already like waiting for it and they're super excited and it's here. It's like being like, oh, this, I've been telling you about this and now it's here and now we can all enjoy it. And they're kind of like, yeah, let's all enjoy this now. So it's a good lead up to like the release of a song.
Is there data to support that? Like, this helps in regards to pre-sales?
I feel like I should have probably been more prepared for this, but yeah, there is. No, it's okay. I think a lot of this is kind of been somebody who's been in data, so I've seen this, and these are things that we've noticed. But I think that data in the music industry is so new that we don't have like full documentation of like, this is why you should do this, because we're just like, oh, finally, we found something that works. Let's just keep going. it's a process that we're learning in the music industry. I think a lot more other industries in terms of data are far more mature than we are, but we're getting there. We've gotten past that. It's a buzzword. People are taking it far more seriously. So that's kind of the first start, but there's not a whole lot of documentation and case studies about how this works, and there probably should be more. And hopefully we'll get there. But at this time, it's just kind of like you need to talk to somebody who sees the data all the time and they can kind of be like, this is the thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, I'm sure it'll come soon. You know, somebody's always trying to figure out what the next wave is or how they can actually look at data and make it work. So I'm pretty sure it's on the way.
Yeah.
Kind of just to go back to that previous question, the reason why I asked about like how much should you post about, you know, yourself versus your craft is because I hear a lot of people suggest that you need to let people in on your real life. You know, people want to see who you are and what you're doing. And so yeah, that's kind of why I asked that question. But also, do you think there's too much of your craft. Like if someone's only posting, this is my next tour date or this is the next album that I'm dropping.
Yeah, because then it feels far more markety, and nobody likes to be sold on anything. People like to buy, but nobody likes to be sold on anything. So you want to make sure that it feels like it's a natural part of your life. Like, I'm in the studio a lot, so I work a lot. But I'm a full person, and I like cooking. I like going on runs with my dogs, if that's your jam. I like dogs, I don't like running. But, like, you want to be able to be like, I'm a full person, but I'm very infusedly passionate about music. If it's just like, oh, here's the flyer for my next show. Oh, here is, like, the drop card for, like, my new single. Like, if you don't have anything that puts it in context that you are a human being, it feels just like a community board where they just put flyers and you're just like, cool. Mm-hmm. Nobody follows community boards, but they will follow real people.
Yeah.
Real people that you engage with and have experiences with and connect with in an authentic way. That's why it's kind of like, it's a good balance to be like, hey, I do music. It's really important to me. And I'm fairly good at it. Hopefully you're fairly good at it. But I'm also a person who also enjoys these other things, because you might connect with fans that wouldn't have otherwise been fans on like things that aren't related to music. Like if they're really into Gregorian chanting like music and you're really into that, you can be like, cool, I also am in a band. Like after you already connected with them, and you know, we use Gregorian chants as kind of like the base for a lot of songs, you might have just got you a new fan. That's really random. But there are other things, like people have a multitude of interests, and you can kind of like gain more followers or more like a larger audience by like being able to connect with who you are fully, instead of just be like, I just make music, that's all I'm about. Mm-hmm. Like, that's cool, but like, do you like chocolate ice cream? That, mm-hmm. I mean, that'd be also cool. Mm-hmm. So making sure you bring your full person to your craft and not just kind of like this slice.
Yeah, that's true. I can attest to that, because there have been artists that I've never heard their music before, but I've watched an interview of them, and then I liked who they were as a person and what they stood for. So it made me go back and check out their catalog. So
yeah, and you just want them to do well. So you're like, I like this person. I want them to do well. I want to see what they're about. And right. Then you go back and check out their music.
Right. Okay. Now, since you specifically work in the publishing field, I wanted to know, how are you guys tracking data? Because everybody you work with is not an artist. Sometimes they're only a songwriter. So working for a publishing company, what kind of data are you guys tracking for those clients who are specifically writers? Like before you sign them, are you looking at the number of songs they have placed on albums, or how many of their songs were licensed in films, or how many people are doing covers or remixes? What does that look like?
Yeah, we are looking at all of that as we're like vetting them. And then once we have them, we want to make sure that they're registered with all of the society so that we can maximize the royalties that they're going to get, and kind of make sure, because at least that's what I'm looking at, because that's kind of like, I want to make sure that these people are able to make a living. So I like check in. One of my favorite things is like black box payment. So when a service uses your music and they don't know who the money goes to, they have to put the money aside, mm-hmm. so that they can eventually pay out either on market share of like who they know makes music, or if people are able to claim it. So what one of my projects is every year, I go through the various black boxes from different streaming providers,
mm-hmm.
and I go through and I use our data, matching our database to any sort of primary key that they could give us, whether it's an ISRC, an ISWC, an HFA code, a song title. I go through it and I use queries to match our data to theirs, and so that I can be like, hey, this is all of ours, and you should be paying us for that so that we can pay out the appropriate person. And so that's been one of my favorite projects, is even though it's long, it's arduous, and I end up swearing at my computer a lot. But it makes me really happy. I do, because it means that we get money for these songwriters that they wouldn't have ordinarily got. And I'm able to use data to do that. And so that makes me really happy, because like it, sometimes it's a lot of money and you're just like, oh, they were going to pay out Beyonce because Beyonce always is like super huge. But like instead it goes to this person who like has like three songs total, but like those three songs did really well. So that makes me happy. It kind of democratizes things a little bit more. That's how I use data on like for clients. And then kind of like as we bring them in, we kind of want to see like how well their songs have performed in the past, because we have the luxury of past data to kind of be like, okay, is this something that we feel like is a safe bet? And that we can kind of like offer them a deal that is comparable to their catalog's worth. So,
what was the tool that you said you used? I kind of missed it. Was it like Aquarius or Aquarium or something?
Oh, yes. So analytics, we use structured query languages so that we can match data or essentially ask anything of our database, and it will give us the answer. It's kind of like talking to your computer. So it's like essentially talking to your Echo or your Google Home, except you have to write it out. And then if you write it correctly and ask it nicely, it will give you the exact answer you're looking for. So
does there have to be some type of data, at least one piece of information, for you to actually track down the creator's
Yes.
work? Okay. Because I was wondering, like, how do you just do that in this big field? Like, if I'm a songwriter or an artist and I put out something, but I never had any data to match it, like, I was wondering, how would you guys go find that for me?
Well, usually when you put out a song, like if you release it through a distributor, you get a UPC, an ISRC. So that's data. That's usually metadata, but it's still data. I could try to match it by the name of the artist and the song, or the name of the songwriter. Hopefully that's right and it's been recorded properly. That's a little bit more tenuous because the data is not always clean. But if you have like an international standard recording code or an international standard work code, then that's like, it's in the name, it's international standard. So it's standardized. It's like it's a one-to-one or one-to-many if it's a ISRC to or a song to an ISRC, because there's different versions. But it's kind of like, this is a unique code that traces only back to like this songwriter. That's usually easier to track.
Do you guys have a system that kind of tracks things that are not online yet? So maybe like, do you guys have like a policing system for, say, someone who's like an independent filmmaker and they may have used this writer's or this artist's work inside their film, but they didn't necessarily get a license for it?
There are tools built into those things, especially like independent filmmakers. Are a little bit harder, but anything that ends up on like streaming, like a YouTube, etc., they have technology to do like underlining audio scan. So like we're able to like see people who upload, because it's uploaded user generated content, UGC. So like if you're in your bedroom and you have like a song playing in the background, like YouTube's able to detect, oh, this is this song, and it'll like, if your publisher or label, et cetera, is like plugged into their like YouTube system, like they will get served that video and like somebody who's familiar with your work, because you're assigned to them, is able to be like, oh yeah, that is our song playing in the background. And if the video is monetized, or if it's monetized at all, then guess what? Some of that monetization gets cut to like the artist's performance and to the publisher. So there are people who do that. With independent films, it's really hard for people to get away with that, because somebody's obviously going to like say something. And especially as publishers who are fairly like cool if you ask us permission, but worse if you ask for forgiveness, because it's like, well, you already used it and you're making money off of work that isn't yours, because if you use it as soundtrack, you're making commercial money, then you're using somebody else's work, and that's basically plagiarism. So we're like, well, now there's this extra penalty, because had you asked us for permission, like we could have like made a deal, but now it's like, oh, this is, you're making money off of, like, it just ask for permission. Right. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah.
Cause it will come out in the wash. People will find out. So,
yeah. And I imagine it only would get worse if the movie actually blew up, because then those damages.
Oh yeah.
Be much higher than if they would have dealt with it in the beginning.
Yeah, we see a lot of those infringements, because that becomes an infringement case. Like there was just that huge case of Got to Give It Up versus Blurred Lines, and they're just like, oh, well, we were inspired by it, but we definitely didn't use it. And everybody's like, and if you listen to it, you're like, okay. But like the court
Yeah,
was
it
just like,
sounds the same.
yeah. So they went to court and then they had to appeal, and that's just expensive. Just ask for permission first. Just ask for permission.
What did it come out to be, like $8 million or something? I forgot exactly.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And then they're like, oh, well, we'll appeal. And the appeals court was just like, nah, homie, we see you. And people are like, well, this is going to be horrible for songwriters. It's like, no, it's actually like, make sure that it makes a more collaborative process. Like, you need to ask if you are inspired by somebody else's work and it sounds a lot like their original work, you should just ask for permission. Give them a cut of the songwriting credit.
Right.
There you go.
Easy. And for those
Easy peasy.
guys to be like in the industry for so long, they know the protocols, or at least the people who are supposed to handle that for them.
Yeah, but they're just kind of like, oh, well, I was drinking a lot and I have no idea what's going on. Like, you can watch the depositions. They are hilarious. Because
Is it on YouTube?
somebody just got, it's probably on YouTube. It was just kind of like, oh, somebody got thrown under the bus pretty hard. But it was kind of, it's just kind of like, oh, well, people have ears. Please bear that in mind when you're making work inspired by other people.
Right. Now, I heard you mention earlier some of the societies and associations that you guys kind of make sure that your clients are signed up with. I always like to get a list from every guest that I talk to just to make sure we get as many as we can. So, can you just give us your list that you guys usually make sure you go through? I heard you mention ASCAP, HFA, but I want to do it on the data side as well. So, the next big sound,
Oh.
what should every client be signed up with in terms of royalties and in terms of data?
As much as I would love to give you an exhaustive list, the list is expensive, and I know you already talked to Chinua and Diana, so I know that they
Yeah,
giving you a
top
list. So
10.
I, yeah, it top 10 depends on where you're located. So like we have societies from like we have U.S. societies, we have Brazil, we have Australia, we have Germany, UK. So it's just kind of like it fluctuates depending, but we have something like 30 plus societies that we can associate people with. So I
Well, let's
generally
be
try to be
US
like, okay,
specific.
well, US specific, that's just like ASCAP, BMI, SOCAN, CSAC for like North America. Like those are generally like you associate with one of those, and then we just kind of take like if you're with us, then we just kind of take care of the rest, make sure that if there is you're getting any sort of play anywhere else, that we also collect on your behalf and like make sure you get that money. But you really just need one PRO like in your home territory to be associated with, and then we kind of like I know from like in terms of what we do, we make sure to take care of the rest.
And do you guys, well, I guess this will make sense for you guys to register with them with Sound Exchange as well, because they still do pay the writers and the publishers. Is that correct? Or do they only pay the master recording owners?
I think the way it's set up currently is only the owners, because we have deals directly with the DSPs so that they don't have to go to Sound Exchange.
Oh, okay. And then, like, on the data side, you mentioned Next Big Sound, and did you say Sound Charts?
Yes, there's a company called Soundcharts, there's Indify, there's a lot of tools.
What else is there? BDS, MediaBase, SoundScan.
Yeah, anywhere you put your music, they generally also offer you some sort of dashboard to see how your music is reacting on that specific dashboard. Like Spotify has it, Pandora has it. I'm not sure if Tidal has it, cause I'm not even sure what's going on in Tidal. I'm hating a lot on, sorry, I'm gonna stop.
You hating on
But
Tidal?
yeah, I've heard really great things about how the sound quality is amazing. I just think that when they released it, they're just like, it's for all of the musicians, and then they like created out like all of these musicians who made lots of money, and they're just like, oh, you could have gone so many ways with this, homie. I remind you, I was a marketing major. It's just like, so we didn't go with like superior sound quality angle. We went with you should give Madonna more money. All right, cool. cool, cool, cool. I want you to do well, but like, who okayed this? Like, if, and then Apple did the polar opposite at their convergence that happens a little bit later, where they picked the songwriter who didn't even have his stuff up on streaming yet. They're just like, they went so far in the opposite direction. I was like, hey guys, there's a happy medium. I'm getting way off
track here. But
there are plenty of different places to find data as an independent musician, mm-hmm. Because the industry is trying to make it easier for people to understand what's going mm-hmm. on.
And when you say they have the dashboard for it, do you mean through like the SongTrust system or DMP system, or are these things that people can access specifically from those companies?
Specifically from those companies. Like if you're an independent artist and you play on Pandora, you can sign up for the artist marketing platform, okay. which will allow you to not only be able to drop in like little 10 to 15 second little messages, be like, hey, this is my new single, just do it. But it will also give you like feedback on the plays and kind of like it'll point you in the next big sound, which will also give you like, hey, this is how the activity of that song is doing, et cetera. Mm-hmm. This is how your campaigns are doing if you're like feature your song. Same thing with Spotify, you're able to kind of see like how the music you put on their platform is performing. Mm-hmm.
Now, is this data pretty easy to read just for the average person who has no background in it? Like, I'm looking at all of this stuff and I'm like, how do I even calculate it to make it make sense to where I can use it to benefit me? Is it that easy? Or should you have somebody on your team that's like, well, the numbers are like this, so you should focus on this area more?
No, they are generally made to be easy to read with the artist in mind, because mm-hmm. It's supposed to be able to work from everybody from your bedroom DJ to the biggest artist in the world. So it's supposed to be something that you could look at. It's very graph friendly, so because people understand a graph going up and to the right is good, and graph going down, like down into the right, is not so good. Mm-hmm. So we try, like everything across all of the platforms that I've seen are made to be very user friendly.
Okay. Now, if you could tell an artist to increase their data in a specific area that would be beneficial and in their best interest, what area would that be in terms of what holds the most weight right now in the digital world or even in the physical? Like, would you say it's most important to have a really huge Instagram following because that's what investors or labels are focused on most?
No, say investors and labels are focused on streams and sales. Cash is always king at the end of the day. And in terms of social, there is no one because different platforms resonate with different demographics. Like, if you are an older R&B artist that caters mostly to like moms and stuff, your crowd is on Facebook. Like that is where moms are on their lunch break when they get home, put up baby pictures and be like, girl, do you know what my kids did today? That is where your audience is.
That's funny.
If you are with like the influencer crowd, and you, like they're into fashion and to like being Instagram baddies, guess what? Your audience is on Instagram. Mm-hmm. If they are super into like politics and just like screaming into the void right now, probably your audience is probably on Twitter. Like there's different platforms, different demographics, but just make sure whatever platform you pick, you are able to engage with that audience. Mm-hmm. But have a good streaming and have good engagement, and you're pretty much setting yourself up for success. It's not, I don't want to be too prescriptive and have people come back to it. I did what you told me. It's like, that's why I'm not in those manager anymore. But
yeah,
if you do these things, you'll be in a lot better place than if you didn't do those things.
Yeah, no, those are good tips. I like that. What about like some other platforms? What is Snapchat? What do you need to do to be successful on Snapchat?
Ooh, Queen Riri said don't fuck with Snapchat right now. So I'm going to stay out of that.
Okay.
But if you, Snapchat is also very interesting because it gives people a glimpse into your life. Mm-hmm. And like being able, and it gives you like the fun aspects of all the filters that Instagram doesn't have. But they have stories, they have geolocators. And so it's really great for like, hey, I'm doing a secret show. And you kind of like, it's very ephemeral. So like things that you want to be, the content to be material and kind of like this shared experience, like this shared fleeting experience. Snapchat is great for that. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, it's our little secret of like what's going on. And like, it's already, like you can point people to Snapchat, be like, follow my Snapchat today for like special announcements, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And kind of like, you'll get like new followers, et cetera. But then you'll be able to share this like experience with them because it will become an experience because it's fleeting, it's material. And you'll be like, oh, remember that one time where they did a bunch of Insta stories and like showed us where they hid tickets for a concert, mm-hmm. but like it disappears. So you're like, you have to be paying attention. It kind of like gets people to like cut through like all the distractions and noise because they have to pay attention to the Snapchat story. Otherwise, like, oh, you missed it, homie. Mm-hmm. So sad.
Now, what about, like, LinkedIn? Because I heard they're becoming more interactive now. Like, you can post more, like, videos and other type of things where I don't know if it's becoming more like mm-hmm. Facebook. But does that work for musicians as well?
It might for some. I haven't met any musicians that aren't, like, essentially talking about how to build a brand. I feel like LinkedIn is far more, like, the professional ilk. And, like, if you're not saying something that's kind of like, oh, this is how you advance in your career, that it gets kind of gets dismissed as like, oh, you misposted this on LinkedIn. You should have went to Facebook. This isn't Facebook. Because it's far more focused. Like LinkedIn is focused on your career trajectory, not kind of like the social aspect of it. There is some social aspect, as you can comment. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like, hey, I'm speaking at this conference as an artist, or I wrote this dissertation about how it is to be an artist, and these are the conditions that we're facing, and these are like, as a community, we should overcome, and far more cerebral in terms of LinkedIn, instead of just be like, here's my music video, mm-hmm. everybody give it a like, because mm-hmm. I feel like that content doesn't fare very well on LinkedIn, given its environment. Mm-hmm. It's great for connecting, being like, hey, you were the sound engineer at my last show. You were like really great. I'd love to like connect with you and kind of like, or like the next time in town, take you out a coffee and kind of get some tips. Cause you put lighting on me like nobody else ever has. And it was great. So et cetera. Like it's great for those things, mm-hmm. like professional wise. I think if you turn it to somewhere that's far more promotional in terms of like, here's my music video, it doesn't read as well as it could be if you placed it on the right platform.
Right. It still has the perception of being like a business networking space.
Yes.
Okay. Now, do you think that the days are over for things like Tumblr, or people still like individual blogs? I know other blogs that are out there that people are already been going to that have, you know, big brands that they're fine. But for an artist, is it still useful to create their own blog and try to get engagement?
And I believe it can be incredibly useful if you have something to say. Mm-hmm. But that's the most important thing. If you're just like, I'm going to put up pictures of, if it becomes far too markety, then that's where you run into the risk of like, oh, it's probably not the best idea for you. If you are able to articulate like all these ideas you have and how incorporates into your art, then it's an amazing tool for you to use, and you can host it on anything, have it connect to your website. Mm-hmm. That's great. I don't think the days of blogging are over. I think Tumblr has had a rough period since its acquisition. Mm-hmm. But there's also like other spaces that have cropped up since then that have been far more welcoming to creators in terms of who like to blog and make sure like things like Medium and being able to have creators get paid for like the things that they share. Mm. So I think blogging is still like, we are still essentially a community of storytellers. And I think artists are really great at being storytellers as long as they have some sort of message to say. And so I think blogging is still pretty good medium to like get that out when like 280 characters on Twitter, when that's not enough, you like, I have a blog, I have some thoughts on these things.
I haven't used it'd be Twitter great if you while, could read man, it because I thought it was like 140. They upgraded.
Yeah, they upped people.
I haven't used it in so
long. First day I got it. I know. First day I got it, I was like, why did they think that giving me this many characters is a good idea? I'm pretty good at a gift.
Right.
Like, I know how to use a well-placed gift. I don't need as many characters. It's a waste.
Right. Okay. Now, I know that Facebook and Instagram both now have the live side to it. So what about things like Periscope? And I don't know any other bigger ones outside of that. Do you think that those are useful, or have like Facebook and Instagram taken over in that space, or people just going there to use the live?
I think people are using whatever is native to the app they're most useful. Like, we talked about how different audiences have like different platforms they prefer. Whatever is native to that app is what people are going to use. If you're on Twitter all the time and there's a button that just says like, make this live, like, super easy.
But is there a large user base still on Periscope, though? I don't know the numbers.
Neither do I. So I would be ignorant to try to pretend that I do.
Because I just know a lot of people, I don't see a lot of people, like, using that. So I was just wondering, because it doesn't seem like it was.
But you also just said you're not on Twitter a lot. So
yeah, I'm not. But I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people still on Twitter, but. Because I guess maybe last year I was seeing a lot of people use Periscope more because they would be, like, linking it to their Facebook. But then I haven't been seeing anybody link it to their Facebook lately.
So. Well, that's because Facebook was like, LOL, we could do a live feature, right, too. Facebook sees everything that's going on. They're like, but we could do this, too.
True. Yeah, they just take over. Oh, one more interesting space. I wonder about MySpace now, because they now have, is it just like a music platform now?
Wait, did MySpace has come back?
Yes, what? Yes. Now they have, it's like MySpace music now, because it used to be just like the regular profiles of, you know, people's personal lives, but now they have MySpace music. So I was just wondering, like, is that really having the effect? Because there's still a lot of people on there.
I mean, it's probably a lot of people who forgot to deactivate the profiles. But,
true.
I digress.
Yeah, you should look yourself up. You might be on there still if you had a profile.
I don't want to see that profile.
Just throw back.
I know what I put on there. I was hoping it would die with the internet.
No. Cyberspace. It's still up there. But yeah, I was just wondering if that's something that you guys still track and still, you know, encourage your clients. Hey, get a MySpace page.
I don't know. Let me make this articulate. I don't think since I've actually interacted in a professional cadence with musicians, I've ever said get a MySpace. So there's that, because I'm old, and that's why I was like, oh, this is a thing again. Maybe if we start seeing more traction about the popularity of MySpace, I'm sure we'll come back to it. But for the most part, a lot of industry have kind of been like, oh, MySpace was a thing, and they've never come back to revisit it. That's kind of how, like, we're seeing a resurgent in, like, vinyl sales, and because we see a resurgent, we're paying more attention to it. We have yet to see that resurgent of people be like, oh, you should check out my MySpace. Like, that's not kind of a thing yet or anymore. It might become one, and we'll be like, all right, we'll check back in and see, like, what's going on here. But we haven't yet, so I can't say that I've heard any artists be like, check out my MySpace and the multitude of events they go to, or that I've told them to jump on MySpace.
Okay. Now, we kind of touched on how data is helping artists today. And you know, my assumption is that it's very important, very, very important. But do you also think that success can be achieved in today's market without it? Or do you absolutely necessarily have to be tracking data?
Without data?
Yeah, just like being involved in a digital world and, you know, that type of data. Can you just be a person that releases your music the old-fashioned way and still maintain a level of success without having to look at the data from, you know, Spotify, Pandora, if you're only releasing it?
But what?
Go ahead.
Yeah, but what do you believe is the old-fashioned way? Because, Right, when you make music now, you'll probably like upload a tune for or CD Baby. That's not the old-fashioned way anymore.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. If somebody just wants to press up their own music and they just want to put it on CDs, yeah, like, and go out on the corner and I'm selling my music on the corner out of my trunk.
I feel like, A, that'd be unnecessarily hard. Mm-hmm. And B, you're spending money you don't have to because, A, most people don't play CDs anymore. So you're spending, like, $1,000 to press, like, 500 whatever CDs for things that people... So you're spending money where you don't need to be spending money because you're like, I want to do this old-fashioned way. When you can spend just, like, the $100 it takes to upload the song to a distributor... to where they will then distribute it to all of the streaming services, and it costs nothing to make those streams, just to get the UPC and all of the codes and, like, register it. So I'm really curious as to why people would do that. I'm very curious as to why somebody would do that, but that's unnecessarily hard. Like, nobody... We are trying to breed new innovation that's helpful and democratizes music, and I feel like going and getting your CDs pressed in this era where people barely buy those would just be foolhardy because you're spending money you don't need to. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that when you say people don't buy CDs anymore, are you thinking that specifically for new artists, or do you think that as well, like when you mentioned the Beyoncé's, are you saying there's fans out there that don't even want to own a physical copy of her music?
I mean, they may own one, but they probably don't play it as much as they would just, like, play it on Spotify, because Spotify is on your phone. Like, you can take it to go. Like, you can't take, like, unless you also then have a Discman, you don't take your CDs to go anymore. They're kind of something that's strictly for home. Streaming has made it possible to take your music with you everywhere now. And that's kind of the how the majority of people now get their music, is they have some sort of streaming account where they're able to play their music. So then going be like, you can only keep this at home unless you also have a Discman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting.
I feel like that is doing yourself a disservice. Mm-hmm. Especially like, because then you also have like artwork, so then you gotta like pay somebody for like the physical like artwork that they put in your CD. So you're just adding to expenses when you can use that money in terms of like marketing your single on like SoundCloud or Spotify, etc. Mm-hmm. Like, that's money that's better spent elsewhere.
Yeah, that's interesting. The reason why I like doing this podcast is because I'm always getting like different ideas of how you should do it. So hearing what you're saying versus another guest that I had that was like, don't sleep on physical sales. You know, and he was like, you know,
I'm not saying sleep on physical sales. There are different ways to do that. It's not necessarily buying a bunch of CDs. Like, if you're not going on tour and you're like going to give them this physical thing after they've had an experience, mm-hmm. then it might, then that's money you could be like doing elsewhere. Right. Like, I wouldn't start off the bat with a physical thing. I would do something that's far more able to permeate a little bit easier, mm-hmm. and you can play a song anywhere on streaming. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't just take a CD and be like, oh, I brought this CD, we should listen to it. Mm-hmm. Then you'd be like, well, do you have a CD player? Mm-hmm. No, you can just open your phone and be like, press play, mm-hmm. and you can like make sure that everybody has access to it.
Right.
And then if you're seeing some sort of signal, then make a limited like run of physical, because mm-hmm. you don't want to like have like 1,000 CDs in a box in your closet because you couldn't sell them.
Right. Yeah, and I think it makes sense because you said about the experience, and I think that's where it can be beneficial if you are going on tour, because those are like the people who you say really want to support you. What I call them, super fans now. So when you go out and do a show, people may want to have something to bring home with them, whether it's a t-shirt or whether it's a CD or a wristband. So I do think in those areas, it does make sense to still have physical CDs. And also for the people who like to look at the artwork, because you did mention artwork, you know, they want to take it home, put it on their wall, or some people that like to read, you know, the inside booklets. So I think there is a space for it still, but just not a large space for it. So I'm kind of like,
yeah,
you know,
those are like your hardcore audiophiles, mm-hmm. super fans, like where they're like, I need to be able to read the lyrics so I can read. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Physical is great for those people, But like that's not gonna be every, that's not everybody anymore. That is like something, and that's a, you have to weigh the, you have to do a cost benefit analysis.
Right.
So it's like, that's gonna cost you money. Is there enough benefit there that you can spend this money? Mm-hmm.
Correct. Now my last question, because I hear people talk about how important this is, so I want to get your take on it. But how important is building an email list today and keeping in touch with your fans that way?
For growing artists, it can be supremely important. But also, like I said, with all things, knowing your audience, knowing what is consistent for your audience. Mm-hmm. I've been put on emails without like asking, and like that's definitely no no. Mm-hmm. But make sure it's like easy to opt out and easy to opt in. Mm-hmm. Like kind of like, oh, if you wanna give us like your zip code and your email, we can let you know when we're coming to do shows near you. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like bare minimum, but like that's something like some people might sign up for. They're like, oh, I like music, I'd love to like get an email, be like, oh, we're about to like, we're, tickets are going to go on sale next week for our show, we're coming to see you. Mm-hmm. Like you're the first to know. Mm-hmm. Like for like exclusive stuff like that, mm-hmm. that it's great. If you're just kind of like filling it with junk, be like, buy my t-shirt, put, see my other friend's band. Like if you're not doing it any way that's going to connect with them, then not super useful, but it's great to kind of like have numbers and kind of have a direct line of contact with people who have already opted into your brand and you as an artist. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Okay, so I always like to give the guest an opportunity to maybe go over some things that I didn't ask in my questions, or maybe there's something that you just want to make sure everybody knows about this specific area that you're an expert in. So I like to give you the floor at this time just to cover anything that maybe I didn't. That's super important.
Oh, no, you did a pretty good job. And really, I just am the data part of it. So I'm trying to stay in just my corner. Mm-hmm. So I don't do artist management. So if people come in up to ask me for that, I don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. Data is becoming more important, and it's really amazing kind of be here and kind of see where we've been and where we're going, and hopefully that we get better at it so that we're able to serve artists. Mm-hmm. And I think I went off topic a lot, so that I got out everything
fun.
Out of
my system. I appreciate it. You got a strong perspective on a lot of things. I like that.
Yes.
Okay, so
strong opinions loosely held.
Yeah, loosely held. But they're good, though. So before we do actually get out of here for good, would you mind giving out any social media or the email address? I know you said you don't like being on email lists, so you don't have to give that out. But if you want to get a space for people to contact you, if they want to know more about data, how to get involved and learn about it.
Yeah, I'd love to, like, converse on my socials, mostly Twitter, though.
Okay.
Because that's where I do a lot of, like, the quick discussion, and it doesn't have to be, like, super high level. Mm-hmm. And I probably need to, like, talk on Twitter more instead of just being there to consume other people's thoughts. Mm-hmm. So if you do Twitter, it's LIL_MISSAWESOME. So it's little underscore Miss Awesome. And I'm there to converse about data. Don't slide in my DMs with nonsense. I won't have it. But we can talk about data.
This is going to be a funny episode. All right. Well, thank you, man. I appreciate it. It was some funny moments in here. So thank you. And we got a lot of good information. So I hope that everybody that is listening, you actually utilize the information, because it seems like it can help a ton. So continue to tune in with us. Remember to rate, review, and like, and all of that different stuff that you guys do. That's what I got from Chinua. He told me to make sure I say that at the end. So I'm using his advice.
Chinua's really smart.
He is. So now I'm like, okay, I'm going to make sure I say it. Because he was like, you know, you want to get more people involved and engaged, make sure you say that. So I'm saying it now. Rate, review, comment, and like, and all that. Because I'm going to have it up on YouTube too. So again, thank you. And
share with all your friends. Tell them to share with all the friends.
Share with really all your friends.
Share with all the
go friends. Ahead. Maybe you should do there my outro for me. You know all the data that works. What else do I need to say?
Mm-hmm.
You guys know everything. That's why I'm interviewing you guys, because you have all the knowledge.
We try our best.
You're doing a pretty good job, and I appreciate you guys. You all have been nothing but supportive, and each of you have something unique to share. So tell everybody at Song Trust and Downtown Music Publishing that Barry appreciates all of you. And I may be reaching out to somebody else.
We appreciate you.
For sure. So I'll talk to you guys soon. Thank you again.
All right.
Have a good one.
Thank you. Bye. You too.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.